Recall a short time ago on this very program, I read an article called The Long Emergency. It was quite a long article, and from Rolling Stone by James Howard Kunstler, and I read the whole thing, or just very nearly the whole thing. Well, it's magic. Tonight, James Howard Kunstler is my guest. James Howard Kunstler graduated from the State University of New York Brockport campus. He worked as a reporter and feature writer for a number of newspapers, and finally, as a staff writer for Rolling Stone magazine. He's lectured at Harvard, Yale, Columbia, Dartmouth, Cornell, MIT, RPI, University of Virginia, many other colleges, has appeared before many professional organizations such as the AIA and the APA, the National Trust for Historic Preservation. Mr. Kunstler also is the author of several books and regular contributor to the New York Times Sunday Magazine and op-ed page, where he's written on environmental and economic issues. His latest book, The Long Emergency, describes the changes that American society faces in the 21st century. We're actually starting through those changes right now. In a moment, James Howard Kunstler. Forgot to put up that photograph. I'll do that actually as I'm speaking with James Howard Kunstler, and he is here right now. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Art.
First of all, as I mentioned, I was so impressed with your article. I just read the whole thing, just about the whole thing on the air. That's unprecedented. I just thought it was so very well done.
Well, I try to write clearly and be lucid.
Well, you achieved that all right, but there had to have been quite a bit of research that went into that.
Well, I've been looking into these issues for quite a few years.
All right, let's begin by describing exactly what it is. The article was entitled in the book, The Long Emergency. Describe what you mean by that.
Well, you know, I got into this after writing several books about the destiny of suburbia.
Mm-hmm.
And however you look at that, it's very hard to avoid a reflection of what our energy future is. And if you look into what our energy future is, you very rapidly come to the conclusion that we're having a problem with crude oil and natural gas. And that can be described as the global production peak. Some years ago, an American geologist named Marion King Hubbard, who came out of the oil industry itself and eventually went into academia, Columbia University and Colorado School of Mines, developed a model for predicting how much oil remained in the United States. And he said, and this is in the 1950s, he predicted that the United States oil production would peak in about 1970, that it would reach a certain point and that we would never produce more, and after that our production would decline. And events proved him to be entirely correct. America did peak in about 1970.
You're saying we've already peaked?
The United States has peaked in production. We were producing 10 million barrels a day in 1970, and now we are producing 5 million barrels a day of conventional crude. And that fact brought on the disruptions of the 70s, the economic problems and the geopolitical power shift from the United States, which had controlled the oil industry and its pricing mechanisms since forever, which shifted then in the 1970s to the OPEC nations. And we all know what happened after that.
I went through all of that. I remember the fistfights, the anger, the long lines. A lot of Americans alive today, of course, did not go through that, don't remember that at all.
Well, I was a young newspaper reporter when that happened. And I covered the story, and it was an amazing disruption in normal American life.
It certainly was.
It was. I remember driving down to New York City at the height of it to see a girl, because I was, 25 years old, and being the only person on the New York State Thruway, and thinking, something has really changed here, Mr. Jones. And but anyway, you asked me to characterize this thing. The lung emergency really deals with the implications of the global oil production peak, which we are now either near or approaching. And what this means is that at a certain point, the world will produce the maximum amount of oil in a given year that it will ever produce, and thereafter we will begin heading down the arc of inexorable depletion.
And I believe there are things that exasperate, make even that worse. In other words, the second half of the oil after the top of the bell curve is going to be much more difficult and expensive to extract than the first half. True?
Yeah, the first half of the oil, we started drilling for oil in about 1859 here in America, and we got an industry pretty well cranked up by the 1880s. And that was all the oil that was easy to get. It was closer to the surface. It tended to be the lighter crudes that were easiest to refine. And after 150 years of sucking that stuff out of the ground and using it and burning it, we're now left with the oil that is harder to find, the oil that lies in more forbidding places, or the oil that belongs to people who hate us, or the oil that is not as good quality. A lot of the oil, to make a distinction, there's this substance called light crude, and then there's a substance called heavy crude. There's sweet crude and there's sour crude. Sour crude tends to have a lot of sulfur in it and is harder and more expensive to refine.
No kidding. I've always wondered, you hear sweet, light crude a lot, and I always wondered what the difference was, and that's it, huh? Sulfur?
That's it.
Sulfur.
Yeah, now, just a few years ago, there was a lot of excitement around the idea that the Caspian Sea region of Central Asia had a huge supply of oil, and it was going to save us from this predicament. And it turned out that they had a lot less oil than had originally been thought, and that it was mostly high sulfur, sour crude. And so that sort of dampened a lot of people's enthusiasm. But as we approach the global oil production peak and then cross over into it, there will be tremendous effects sort of thundering through our economies and our societies. And a lot of systems that we depend on for our complex modern everyday life are going to start wobbling and destabilizing as a result.
All right, we'll get into that. Let's take care of a couple of very strong rumors that are out there right now and see what you have to say about them. One is, I've been getting emails from certain groups who, for some reason or another, believe that some oil fields, if not most, if we would just check, are magically refilling. Somehow or another, magically refilling from beneath, or that the theory that the Earth is generating continuous amounts of oil and these oil fields are just refilling and we should notice.
Well, that's a group of people who believe that the Earth has a creamy nougat center of petroleum.
Yes.
People like Peter Huber, the author. I think the fact is, if you actually look at the situation, there is no instance of an American oil field in Texas or Oklahoma or California or anywhere else spontaneously refilling.
I could imagine, for example, a situation where an adjacent oil field suddenly breaks through under certain pressure conditions, or who knows.
Well, let's put it this way. There are liquids down there in the sedimentary layers, and over time, there will be some movement of them. But the fact is that no significant major American oil field has ever spontaneously refilled or even shown any partial amount of refilling. It's really it's really a myth that this is happening, and it kind of interestingly reflects the degree of wishful thinking that exists in the country.
Yes. All right. So
it harks back to the Jiminy Cricket syndrome, as I call it.
All will be well. All right. Well, that's one myth down the drain. Another said frequently is that American oil wells are capped, and most of them are capped because of the price of oil. And when the time comes right, we will uncap them and have all the oil we need. What say you?
Well, what I say is that a lot of these oils, which are in the older producing areas in Texas, Oklahoma, and California, you know, places that have been pumped for, you know, going on 80, 100 years, these wells were capped because they were producing so poorly.
Mm-hmm.
And they probably do have some oil left, and there is a belief that if you go back in there with new technology, like horizontal drilling and bottle brush drilling, that you will extract enough oil to make it worthwhile. That said, you know, it doesn't mean that the fields will not then deplete entirely, or that the oil that comes out won't be, a tremendous amount. It'll just be a bit. And there are all kinds of bottom feeders in the oil industry who can make a living extracting small amounts of oil from played-out wells.
But that's not going to fill the giant coffers and the requirements that we have.
Oh, gosh, no. Is it going to run the interstate highway system?
Yeah.
Forget about it.
Mm-hmm. So that one's down the drain. There's not that much oil there. What about Alaska? Now, we've got one field. I wonder how much oil's left there. And, of course, we're getting ready to go over to Anwar. What are the expectations there?
Well, the North Slope, which we began drilling very heavily in the 1970s and 80s, was a great productive field, and it was one of the world's last great discoveries. And it is now officially past peak and in depletion, and is producing, you know, fractionally a few percentage points less every year, and will continue to until it is finally depleted. So, it had a good run of about 30 years, which is about, you know, normal. It's about what the geologists expect. That would be Prudhoe Bay and the fields associated with it. It came online around the same time as the North Sea over in England and Scotland and Norway.
Mm-hmm.
And the discovery of those two gigantic fields were two of the really last significant oil-producing regions that were ever found in the world. And they pretty much did save our situation back in the early 1980s. And they allowed us to sort of go back into our sleepwalking mode for the next 15, 20 years.
Boy, do we ever do that, too. I mean, we had the 70s oil problem. Big cars sort of went away.
Yeah.
We retooled. The Japanese got rich with the small cars. And then as soon as we got cheap oil again, it's like we forgot it ever happened, went right back now with the SUVs and all the rest of it.
Well, Ronald Reagan said it was morning in America, but a lot of people thought he meant that you could sleep another 6 hours. and that's exactly what the United States did. So, the tremendous production coming out of Alaska and the North Sea kind of equalized the pressure that was coming from OPEC,
mm-hmm.
and allowed the price of gas to stay relatively stable for about a 17-year period.
Very good for the economy.
Well, for the economy, such as the economy was, and of course, the economy is the big question mark when you're talking about oil and oil depletion.
Well, I was just on my way back from California about a week ago, stopped in Baker, California, and The price of premium there was $3.19. I took a picture. I just put it up on the website, yeah. Folks, if you want to see it. And just about $3 for even just regular gas. So though that's slightly unusual, we're paying a lot of money now for energy, whether it's gas or propane or whatever kind of energy you use. It's beginning to cost a lot of money, and I've noticed they raise it 15, 20 cents, go back 2 or 3 cents, and we all go, yay. We're happy, but it's going up and up and up in stages.
Well, this is what I call a ratcheting effect.
Yes.
You know, it will go up 3 clicks, then it will retreat 2 clicks, then it will go up 4 clicks, then it will come back 3 clicks.
Right.
And this is pretty much what we're going to be seeing in the months and years ahead, although the ratcheting itself could actually become even more extreme than it is now.
And I think the important thing for Americans to understand is it's not just the price of energy. It's how the price of energy affects the entire economy, since everything we get is delivered through the use of energy, right?
Or made, or even created.
In other words, all the way around, all these things we have around us, the way they get here, all of it, energy, is equal to energy. That means our economy is equal to energy. Or equal, every tick up, you were calling it in ticks, every tick up means a tick down for the economy, right?
Well, these things thunder through our economy. And that was the great lesson of the 1970s was, you know, the oil price doesn't just exist in a vacuum. Once that goes up, all of a sudden you get tremendous price inflation in all your household goods and all the necessaries of everyday life. And, you know, back then the economists kicked back and scratched their heads and wondered what they were seeing. And they pronounced the phenomenon stagflation. In other words, stagnant economy with inflation. And they were baffled by it. It didn't fit any of the models they had created. Which says something about the limitations of highly conventionalized economics, because it was really quite clear what was going on. It was, you know, an 8-year-old child could have figured it out.
All right, so that we're all clear, this halfway point on oil, that is half the oil that we're going to be able to get, we've already gotten. Are we at peak oil, or have we now passed peak oil, or is that hard to call?
It's always hard to call, and the conventional wisdom is you see it in the rearview mirror a few years down the road.
Right.
Because that's when the production figures actually come in, and you know how much was produced, how much was actually produced. That was certainly the case in the 1970s when the U.S. peaked in 1970, and that event was signaled by the Texas Railroad Commission, an obscure little agency which had the task of regulating the pumping quotas for Texas oil.
Mm-hmm.
And in 1970, they basically sent a message out to the oil producers and to the world, which was, you guys can now pump 100%. They told them you could open the valves to 100% from now on, and that's all fine. What that meant was that they could produce as much as they could possibly suck out of the ground. What that also meant was that they had reached their production limits, their final capacity. And in fact, if you looked at the production data a few years later, you saw that the United States never produced as much oil again as it had in 1970, that it began going incrementally down after that.
Mm-hmm.
So the world is now in a situation where we have reason to believe we may be at or near the peak.
All right, so we see something in the rearview mirror. We're not exactly sure what it is yet, but there is an image in the rearview mirror, and it may be peak oil. James, hold on a sec. We're at the bottom of the hour. We'll be right back. Now, what does this mean? Well, it means everything for us. I mean, everything, our whole economy, everything you know, everything you do is powered one way or the other. And maybe the power is almost gone. We'll be back.